Right, Mars. Honestly, I was just, we were just saying off camera how amazing to see you back in the UK because this guy is always traveling. I mean, clearly he has made way too much money and doing really well. But more importantly, I think what's good about you, since we've met, and it was a year ago now, you've done a course. What I liked about a lot of the guys that I work with is action takers. Yeah. Absolutely. So, Mars, give us a bit about background about you, because you've got a fantastic background with finance, selling your business and stuff. So just give us a quick update about a background about where you've come from and why property now.
So I started a finance company at 25. That was going really well. That was doing international payments. And then fast forward 7 years later, 8 years later, we sold it to a PLC. For what we thought was a good number. One of the main reasons was the finance industry, look, there's still a lot of legs there to be, you know, the industry is never going to not be there, but it was getting more red tape, it was getting a lot more competition, it was getting, there was just things in there that I wasn't enjoying. So me and my business partner at the time, we thought, look, it's best off we sell, cash the chips in whilst we can, and then
a lot of chips you cashed as well,
there's some good chips in there. And yeah, then we decided to stay into property. I put my money into property anyway. It was something that I've always loved. You know, I was always on Rightmove. You know, at work, I flipped deals even when I had the business.
Yeah.
But I thought, well, look, now I've got the opportunity with not having any finance. I will just go, you know, full steam ahead. Hence the reason I started looking at different strategies, and hence the reason I came across, obviously, yourself. I wanted to be in something which was a little bit less, I would say, saturated from your flips and your HMOs and sort of Airbnbs and whatnot. So that's what made me basically look at your course and take it, to be honest.
Because I think that's a good point, because I think it's that complexity with Title Split that separates it apart, right? Because it's not your Joe blog every day. I've got 25% deposit, I'm going to buy a house and put one tenant in it. And I think, you know, so when we met and I was, you know, I was like, look, yeah, there's a lot of chips there. You can repatriate. And so great coming from finance. You said another thing. You've always loved property. And I think this is a big thing. I think people who love what they do cannot fail, right? And I try to instill that with my kids, you know, the teenagers. And I'm saying, look, if you find something you love, you don't have to be the PhD guy. You don't have to be, you know, whatever the society tells you to be. But if you find something you love, I love what I do. And I can see now you love what you do. Yeah. If you're doing properties before you even got into property full-time, you love it, right? Yeah. And I think that's why you've been so successful, because when you love it, it's every day. You don't feel like you're working.
No.
Right?
No. And so, even the challenges that you get thrown at you, it's just... Look, it's stressful, don't get me wrong.
But
it's a stress that you're willing to take. It's different, like if you're either working for somebody else or even your own business in a job where, yes, it's your business, but you might not be passionate about it. So when you do come across a complexity or a challenge, you are like, it drains you. This is a different draining, if that makes any sense.
And no, 100%, 100%. I think it's about the mindset as well. You know, you come at it from a different mindset as well, especially if it's your own business, it's your own thing. You then want to put as much effort as possible 100%. To fix it.
100%.
So... let's talk a bit more about the deal. So you finished the course and, well, really, just straight away, you found this amazing deal. And I have to say, you know, people who are not familiar in London, Mars bought a place in Richmond, so he's going to talk a bit more about that deal. Richmond is the place if you want to be in the west side of London. I'm an East Londoner, so I can't be too impressed on the West London thing. But, you know, if you were to move in West London, I think you'd want to. If you could afford it, to move into Richmond. So can you share a bit more information about the deal that you'd found, how you'd found it, and how, you know, it was almost virtually straight after the course you're going to start to look and you found it. So give us a bit more information about how you found the deal first and what did you find?
Okay, so I know we're on a time limit, so I won't go into too much either, because this one has had a few ups and downs. But so after the course, like as you do, you show many different ways to source the properties. I went on auctions. I found on Savills this one in Richmond.
Yeah.
It initially was four flats. It started off as two studios. One studio, two one beds and a two bed. But when I went in there, you could just see this was just completely not figured correctly. Yeah. I actually, in all honesty, think it was illegally converted. That's a conversation for another day. So we went in there and I just thought, no. And I thought I'd actually make more money by reducing it to three flats, but making it bigger. And then the top two flats, the studio and a one bed, I actually amalgamated as one
yeah.
to make a duplex. So this deal cost me $1 million to buy.
Yeah.
And you know, even look, it's a high price, but I know what things were going in the area, in right? The area.
So correct.
When you break it down, it wasn't too bad.
Yes.
Now it was a funny one because I actually got beaten on the deal by somebody else. But they was actually going through a religious period, a festival at that time when the hammer dropped.
Okay.
And part of their religion in that time, in that festival, was in 14 days of however that lasted, they're not actually allowed to do any business and they're not allowed to sign any contracts.
Oh, wow.
So this was just complete luck, right? So this was just luck and timing.
Wow.
So,
wow.
The auctioneers at Savills said, well, look, they can't sign for 2 weeks. If you can get this done, yes. like signed and the first deposit in like ASAP.
Oh, I remember that.
It's your deal, basically.
Yeah, because we were on the phone talking about it. Yes, right? yes.
So I said, fine. I say, brilliant. So anyway, done the deal, got the deal, blah, blah, blah. Thought this was going to be relatively straightforward.
Yeah.
Now the complexities come into play. So obviously I needed planning permission to convert the studio and the one bed into a duplex. The planning permission actually went through fine. That went through like on a 9-week process, pretty standard.
Which is, to be fair to you and the process and the team you work with, it's unusual to get it that quickly. In Richmond, in rich areas, people look for things to say no to.
Yeah, to say no to. And, right. and I think that they knew the building was unlivable anyway.
Yeah.
Like it was completely uninhabitable. Yeah. So they put it through relatively quick, so we was happy about that. Now the trouble we had was building control.
Yeah.
Now I can go on for hours about this, but what really stood out was the councils are at such disarray in their own departments that it just, if I'm going to be honest with you, no one knows their arse from their elbow. it's just the truth.
That's fair. Yeah.
And it's, you know, and it, cut long story short, I ended up going through 4 different building controls because 3 of them all left the job at Richmond Council.
Oh, wow.
And the trouble is, when one asked us to do something or change something or their view on what we should do so they would pass it, we would do the works and they would leave.
Yes.
So then the next one would come on, and instead of looking at the paperwork and say, right,
this was agreed,
100%.
Are you on target to it? Done.
He would have his own view.
His own views on it.
And this caused just complete calamity. So the architects, everyone that we used, done everything above board. Now, what the issue was fire safety. And because of Grenfell, April this year, building control completely changed on the way that they'd look at fire safety across the UK.
Yes.
So their argument was, we want to put a vent at the top. When you come into the building, there needed to be an open air vent. So if anything was to happen, smoke rises and then, you know, an AOV opened and let the smoke out.
I mean, that's some serious level of fire safety kind of implementation for a block of, in effect, 3 flats. And I think, you know, not to go into the detail of too much of the actual application itself, but suffice it to say that you struggled with the building control.
Big time.
And I think one of the things that, for people listening here, is one of the things you can actually do is use private building control. And that's one thing that you can then get rid of. I mean, we certainly do not use the council's own building control. And this could be quite a new thing that people might be listening to. Hang on a minute, can you do that? Yes, you can, because there's loads of private building controllers. In fact, probably, I'm going to hazard a guess, the 3 that left, probably 1 or 2 of them have done their private.
100%.
So you get into this building, you buy it on £1 million.
Yep.
It is empty at the moment, right, when you buy it on entry?
Empty, completely empty.
Completely. And you said it was unlivable. Why was it unlivable?
No kitchens, one toilet in one flat, not in the others. It was just, it was a mess inside.
Okay, so here's a question for you then that people will probably be thinking, God, you spent £1 million on something that sounds terrible.
Yeah.
So what did you see? How did you compute these numbers? And what were you thinking of?
Again, going back to the title split, knowing that what we was going to do
and
put them on their own titles, then we're looking at it, what each flat would be on an individual basis.
Yes.
So even when buying it, before even thinking of reducing it to 3, I'm thinking, well, I'm getting 4 flats here in Richmond for £250 each. Do you know what I mean? It's just unheard of.
And I call it wholesale to retail. That's what you're buying wholesale, £1 million for 4 flats, which is, you know, on a retail perspective, £250,000. Wow.
100%.
I remember thinking, mate, that's an amazing, amazing find in Richmond.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I could find a few more of them, I would be over the moon, if I'm honest. But, so then look, I did all the works up, and then
so you're in for £1 million full yep. flat. GDV is what at that time on entry, when you're thinking 250 on entry, you're getting four flats, 250 each. What did you think the GDV was going to be on entry?
Thought that we'd be more at about 1.5 million.
Yes, I recall that number.
But luckily, we got higher than that on in value because of because we reduced it. Well, I reduced it to being a duplex.
Yeah.
That then obviously increases square footage of one flat because obviously you're combining the two.
Yes.
A much nicer living space, blah, blah, blah. So to give you the numbers, the new duplex was valued at 700 to 725.
Wow.
So let's just go at 700.
Yeah.
The one bed in the middle was a nice size. That got valued at 500. And then the one bed basement with a garden, ensuite, separate bathroom, lovely living space. But this one was done really high spec, to be honest. That's worth anywhere between 5 to 550. But again, I'll just give you the worst case.
So we're saying that 1.7 million GDV.
Is GDV, yeah.
And how much is how much cost have you now spent? So you bought that million.
Yep.
How much have you spent and to get this valuation of 1.7?
So even with the extra building control nonsense.
I know. We had a conversation. Yeah. You were like pulling your hair out. Oh my God. Yeah. Right.
Because it was never ending. But yes. It was all in at 220.
Wow. So let's say, let's round up. So let's say 200 grand you spend, you buy a million, so 1.2 million all in. So your actual profit, if you were to sell it all, in Richmond you could sell these and there's three of them,
easy.
Like that, right? Yeah. You'll capitalise £500,000.
Yeah. Well, do you know what I've actually done, Azid? Mm-hmm. I've not put a mortgage on the bottom flat, so it's unencumbered.
Lovely.
So I can.
Yes.
So I can release the equity and put it on there, but it's completely unencumbered. And to be honest with you, this is a little bit more technical, so we won't go down it, but what I am going to use it for is, if I do buy anything else again in the future, I will use that as my collateral on top of the cash.
Actually, here's a great, that is not by the side, that's a great thing to talk about. So there's multiple ways we can finance, right? So let's talk about, how did you finance this deal, by the way, the £1 million on entry?
So that one was bridging loan. Yeah. So I did half of it, 50% of it is deposit.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it was bridging loan through Richard.
And do you remember we had that conversation? I said, look, you had enough money to not borrow too much.
Yep.
So reduce your cost. Yep. And that seemed to have worked out quite well. So you've not ended up spending too much money on the bridge. Yep. And from the time you bought it to the time you've kind of got the valuation at 1.7, how long has that taken, bearing in mind all the hassle you've had to deal with the building control?
It should have taken, without the hassle, it should have taken about 8 months.
Yeah.
With the hassle, it ended up taking about a year and 2 months.
Okay.
A year and three.
So let's say it's a year-ish to make £500,000.
Yes.
I think most people listening to this will be thinking, or watching this, will be thinking, do you know what? My heart bleeds for you, Miles. You know, really, how did you cope with yourself on that? But going back to this, you just mentioned about collateral.
Yes.
So here you have got a building that's worth 1.7. You've got one that's unencumbered for 500,000, let's say.
Yep.
So walk me through, and I'm not going to talk about it. You talk me through. How are you planning to use that as a collateral to buy your next block? How are you going to fund that?
So because it's unencumbered, what we can do is we can say, right, we'll get a valuation on this flat now. So the value will come out and say, look, it's worth £500,000, let's say.
Yeah.
So they'll say, right, we will lend you based on the value of this flat.
Yeah.
So in this case, I've actually just bought something else, but I am actually using, I'll use this as an example. So I'm actually getting 70% on this valuation.
So 70%, £350,000 on the unencumbered property.
Exactly that. Yeah. I've got to top it up with a little bit extra cash.
Yes.
But not too much.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and that's what I'm using.
And so you use the £350,000 to buy the next block.
Exactly.
So how is that working out? So how much is the next block?
So It's probably not the best for this podcast. Okay. This one's actually not a block.
Okay, that's fine. Talk for it.
No, I saw a good deal in Notting Hill.
Okay.
So
lovely.
Yeah, so
you're keeping to the nice part of the country, right? How much is that one, and what is it?
I saw on, again, Savills Auctions, but I saw that they mislabeled the floor plan.
And just to be clear, this is not being paid by Savills Auction, by the way, this podcast.
I wish it was.
But go on. So what did you buy, and how much did you pay for it?
So I bought a... So it's going to be a one bed, 581 square foot for 430,000.
I'm laughing because people up in that are kind of thinking, what, you bought a one bed, 40 square meters yeah. for 500 grand.
Yeah. You know? They'll be laughing. Yeah, they will. But they'll be laughing. Who's this mug?
Yeah. Okay. So 500 grand. So free, yeah. Just to go back to the finance. So then you buy this at 500,000. You yeah. use the 350,000 that you've bridged against your flat in Richmond.
Yep.
And that then gets you to buy this £500,000. And then you take yep. a mortgage on the rest of the 150, or do you put that down as a
no,
cash?
So it's 430 to buy the Notting Hill place. Yep. They're giving me 350.
Yeah.
So obviously I've got to then bring up the cash in between. So what's that? It's
like 80 grand.
80,000.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to do a light refurb on it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be all in once the refurb's done, stamp duty, et cetera, at 510.
Yeah.
Amazing. I've had valuations from four different estate agents.
Yeah.
Once it's a one bed high spec at about 650.
Yeah.
And I want to actually just flip this one.
Okay.
I want to get the money back in the pot
yeah.
then to look at the bigger blocks and,
do it again.
And whatnot.
Yeah.
Or even buy two blocks, yes. you know, whatever.
Yes, yes. We're going to talk about creative sourcing in a bit, but we've sure. got some stuff coming up now.
Sure, sure. So yeah, I just saw this as a bit of a money booster.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's an area you know well, you know it's high value. Yeah. And sometimes people think, oh, why are you spending 400 grand, but you're making 150 grand on a flip.
Yeah. It's 6 weeks' work of, yeah. of refurb.
Which is ridiculous yeah. Returns that you make.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so thank you for that. Because I think that's a really good one that, you know, I'm now coaching people around this whole bridging thing. If you've got collateral, and a lot of people who come to us to talk about title split are landlords already, they've yeah. got capital already. And sometimes, just like me and like you, we've got collateral that are unencumbered. Yeah. So instead of refinancing the money and getting a mortgage on these, you can just bridge against it for a period of time, take the money out for a period of time, and then put the rest of the money. I've just done one. So I think I've talked to you about it. I bought a drug den, an ex-drug den, 10 flats, and that was unencumbered. We paid 480 for it, and we got it revalued 1.4 million.
Wow.
So 8 months later, trials and tribulations, lots of different things to fix, but the bigger problem you fix, the more money you yeah. make, right? Yeah. But I got then I had a building, 1.4 million unencumbered, went to the bank and they gave me 75. Well, I didn't even end up, I borrowed 400,000 on that building. Then I bought another block at £1 million. And on that £1 million one, I got 70% of the million because it was already rented. It was already buying income. Okay, yeah. So they gave me 700 plus 400, 1.1 million, which is the bridge plus their cost. So I literally ended up putting no money down.
Wow.
So it is quite creative in that way. Yeah. And I think there are so many ways we can actually buy 100%. Properties doing these things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you this question, but and I'm not going to ask you about building control. So the biggest challenge you face during the whole process, apart from the building control nightmare, what would you say that is?
Builders.
Builders. Okay. Tell yeah. me about that.
I had one set of builders first, was recommended to me, probably my fault really, because I didn't really do the due diligence on him because he was recommended.
Yeah.
He ended up running off with 40 grand.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that was a...
With no contracts, no...
Contract, yeah, but he...
They can't find him.
He ended up actually having, I'll tell you quickly, fake name.
Oh God.
Fake everything.
So what would you change? What if somebody's listening to you and I feel, okay, so this is quite topical, you know, people do have these problems.
Yeah.
What do you think now, bearing in mind your background and, you know, your background in finance, you know, yeah. checking, what would you do? Well, what did you do different the next time around?
Well, now I've actually got my own set of builders.
Yeah.
And if, you know, if I was to lose them, it would be a lot of due diligence before I take the next person.
So what would you, for example, tell me three things you would check?
I would do recommendations. And yeah. with a recommendation I do get, I'd ask to see their work.
Yeah.
If they're currently doing some work for someone, I'd ask to come down and see their work that they yeah. are currently doing so then they can't shy away from anything.
Yeah, company's house, maybe company's a house, yeah. credit check or something like that. Yeah.
Because people think, oh, it's a builder, you don't need to really credit. You want to see that...
The person.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's a massive thing because, you know, we talk about, I mean, I talk about it on social media. There's lots of mentors around, yeah. right? But people have bought, I mean, I've got somebody who came to see me about 3-4 years ago. This lady, really lovely lady, wanted to get into HMO. She came to visit me and she was saying, thinking about it. Now she's done one HMO and I see her that she's selling courses. You're like, wow.
She's an expert.
Yeah, she's an expert. And I think, you know, people need to do their due diligence, right? So, you know, how do you check? Do these people have actually owned these things? Yeah. So a builder, do they have credit issues. And if they have got credit issues, you know, there might be some issue that they, you know, they take your money, they've got debt, they've got to pay
with someone else.
Exactly. Yeah. So, builders are not great fun.
No.
Okay. So now moving on to, thank you for that. Thank you for understanding, you know, explaining your title split journey, your investment journey, your problems that you've faced on it and what you're working on at the moment. Can I take you back around now the course and what you did with me now?
Sure.
Title split about a year ago. How did you come across the program itself? And
so funny enough, I actually come across you on YouTube.
Okay.
So I was looking at different property strategies on YouTube, HMOs, yeah, refinance, blah, blah, blah. And one of your videos came up. And then I thought I'd click on your profile So I did. And then you had a link on there.
Okay.
And that's the way it was. Yeah. It was via YouTube because I watched a video explaining it and I was like, this sounds good.
Yeah. Okay.
Hence the reason why I wanted to go from there.
Fab. Okay, so then you came and did the one-to-one course with me,
which was
structured in the 4 weeks content and then the 6 hours after you buy, that then I handhold you for the process.
Sure.
So if somebody was listening to this or watching this, and what would you say about the program, the structure itself, and the length of time that I give you, which was 12 months?
I think, to be honest with you, for me, it was perfect because everything was in bite-sized chunks.
Yeah.
So it was, let's say you learn on a Monday, as an example, and then we won't reconvene till next Monday, but that's because everything that you've taught me on that Monday, you go away, soak it in, absorb it.
So if you're talking about sourcing, for example, on week 100%. One, I'll ask you to go, but I'll teach you everything where to go and do it. And I expect you to go and find these blocks. Yep.
You give us the Excel with the costings, the
deal analyzer.
And then you go back, you play around with it, and then you give you some examples, and you'll be like, yes or no, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it's just a really good way of being thrown in the deep end, to be honest.
And it's quite accountability driven, right? So every week you're expected to do it because next week we're going to have that conversation. Yeah. Have you done it? And then you're asked to send the work. So I think that's one of the things that I think works really well for people because...
Sure.
You are going to expect it to have done something and come to the table with it.
Well, for me, I'm someone that learns by hands-on.
Yeah.
I'm not someone just sits there, just read a book and then you learn. I need to be thrown in. I need to make the mistakes. I need to say, no, you've actually done that wrong, Miles. And that's what you did.
Okay. So how much has, you know, now doing the, so you come from finance, how much having done the course and started to do more property full-time, has that helped you to achieve your financial goals doing the title splitting course and doing all of that bit?
To be honest with you, massively, because you can look, I treat some people, you know, look at property in different ways, but I treat it as a business because it is a business.
It is.
And
absolutely.
You know, this is going to be, you know, a full-time income for me, right? So
I've got to buy
the right deals that cash flow, or if you're flipping, it's got to have the right margin.
Yes.
So everything now is really good on that front.
Amazing. And on you, because on week one, hour one, we talk about financial goals and expectations and where you want to be in 10 years from now.
Yeah.
Do you see that now? Well, I think I know the answer, but do you see yourself hitting that milestone probably earlier?
Probably earlier, to be honest with you, because now, luckily, touch wood, I've got a bit more capital still.
Yeah.
I can accelerate the purchasing.
Yeah.
So I'll probably get to that goal a bit quicker than initially thought.
Amazing. That's music to my ears, mate. And that's probably not the reason why I've invited you. There's loads of people coming after you,
I think
you are a doer. You make decisions well and you execute. You know, these are the things that matters. You know, lots of people say, you know, my biggest bugbear when people say, oh, you know, or people in my network, they say, oh, yeah, I thought about properties 20 years ago or 25 years ago. I said, well, did you do something about it?
No.
Okay, well, then what's the point of even saying
it? You've got to pull the trigger.
Got to pull the trigger.
You have to pull the trigger.
So my last question for you, Miles, is people say, or I want to ask, is Azid for real or another social media wannabe? What would you say to that?
He's 100% real. To be honest with you, you couldn't be more real, mate. I mean, you know, compared to a lot of what's out there, and I've seen a lot of what's out there, you're 100%, mate. You're accessible on WhatsApp. You could phone call away, an email away if you're doing old school stuff, you know, and or if you just generally need some advice or some help or whatever, you're always there. So you're 100% real.
amazing. But listen, thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate the fact that you've come all the way from the nice part of Richmond to come here. But I look forward to obviously hosting you the next time once we've seen you make 150 grand in 6 weeks.
By all means, we get the keys next week, so feel free to come down whenever you want.
I'm definitely going to be down there having a coffee with you in Notting Hill.
100%.
Thanks, Miles. Thanks for coming, mate.
Take care.
All right.